Hey everybody, welcome into this weekend edition of the Bills Wire Daily Podcast. I am your host, Jeremy Uhas. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode as we're ever so close to the opening of the regular season where the Buffalo Bills travel to take on the Baltimore Ravens, as you know by now. In our last episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Sean Grogan of Cecil Daily and getting an insight into the Baltimore Ravens, their roster, and what they're going to be looking to do against the Bills, and kind of a good overview of the Ravens and their expectations for 2018. I have another guest today visiting on the episode. This is a special guest over at Ravens Wire, our sister site of the Wire Networks. Proud to have Matthew Stevens join us here in a moment on the podcast. But first, want to remind everybody that they can subscribe to this podcast by listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify as well, on Stitcher. Make sure you leave us a review, rate us. We appreciate all that you guys can do in that regard. Would help us out a lot. And listening on a daily basis, we hope that you guys are enjoying it just as much as we are producing these daily episodes. A special weekend edition as we're real close. Want to remind people too that we'll have a post-game wrap-up podcast episode. It'll be myself and Bradley Gelber from Bills Wire. We'll kind of wrap up the game and wrap up the matchup against the Ravens on Sunday evening, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But before that game to be played, we are going to visit one more time with another Ravens expert, and again, as aforementioned, Matthew Stevens from Ravens Wire. Hey, Matthew, what's going on? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. So excited for real football again. How about you?
I know. Finally, you know, Sunday, you know, to come around here. It's interesting that it goes so fast. You know, I think once, like, training camp starts and preseason games are underway, week one just creeps up on us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things of, you know, after waiting 7 months, it's the week one comes super, super fast, and it's kind of almost like we're not entirely ready for it yet.
Yeah, and then it's going from these games, especially, you know, usually the preseason game number four to the week one, like, you're going from a game that doesn't matter at all to, you know, real football. So it's exciting. And for the Ravens, this is, you know, preseason. They had five preseason games, of course, in the Hall of Fame game, too, for them, so I guess I'll start there. How did they look in the preseason? Kind of what did you take away? Just overarching themes, if you could, if there was anything really to glean from their preseason and just those, like I said, those big storylines from the preseason for the Ravens.
Well, this preseason, we didn't really get a chance to see the starters terribly much, despite playing in five games. You know, five games for this team this preseason, who is typically had a ton of injuries over the last 4 years. You know, they've put an average of 19 players on injured reserve for over the last 4 years. So, I mean, that's huge for them. So they were really, really big on not putting their guys out there terribly much and more or less using the extra training camp reps and two different joint practice sessions with the Rams and then the Indianapolis Colts kind of as their preseason for their starters. So we didn't get a chance to see a lot of what this team can really do. We got a chance to see the backups. And in Baltimore, you know, with injuries having been such a huge thing, the backups have a lot of experience, a lot of starting experience. So they did just as well as we kind of expected them to do, which is they beat up on a lot of other third, fourth string guys. You know, the starters, when we did see them, looked good. The defense had no problems taking teams completely out of the game. I mean, there were the few snaps that they did get, the few drives they did get, you know, they were holding teams to negative yardage on three downs, forcing them to punt. And then the offense was going out there, taking, you know, six, seven plays, marching down the field and putting it in the end zone. So, you know, it's tough to kind of see exactly what this team is when they've gotten so few snaps starter-wise. But this looks like a continuation of last year in which the defense was good as always. But then this offense with new additions like Michael Crabtree and John Brown and Willie Snead, draft picks like Hayden Hurst and those types of guys offensively have been added to an offense that was not necessarily all that great last year, but came on strong at the end of last season as Joe Flacco got healthy for the quarterback position. So I think this is just kind of a good continuation of that from what we have seen and what we have seen in training camp. But as we know, training camp, preseason doesn't necessarily indicate how good or bad a team is actually going to be. So this will be a good, really good first test for the Ravens starters, and give Ravens fans maybe their first real serious look at what this team can actually do this season.
Let's start with the defense, because they have a new defensive coordinator in Don Martindale. And when you think of the Baltimore Ravens, you think of that defense typically. I mean, obviously with the Ray Lewis years and going back that far, but, you know, even with Suggs and just kind of building their team with a really feared defense, especially in the AFC North with the Steelers and Marvin Lewis there in Cincinnati. I think it's definitely a defensive division if you think about it. But, you know, what's Don going to bring? He's not necessarily a household name at the defensive coordinator position. Not a lot of maybe the casual fan would know who he is, but the Ravens returning pretty much every starter, Smith aside with a suspension. But, you know, what do you think he's going to bring, if any, new flavor or wrinkle to the Ravens defense that the Bills may have to contend with on Sunday?
Well, in talking to several of the players this offseason, you know, the words that got used every single time we talked to everybody was more freedom, less robotic. You know, under Dean Pease, a lot of Ravens fans didn't necessarily like Dean Pease because he was very robotic. He was very much a bend but don't break type of defense, which doesn't really work for the type of talent Baltimore has defensively. It didn't really take advantage of all the experience and all the knowledge and just all the talent that Baltimore actually does have on their defense. Don Martindale has been kind of the opposite of that. He's allowed guys like Eric Weddle, Tony Jefferson, Brandon Williams, CJ Mosley, Terrell Suggs to use their years of experience in this league, going up against some of the best offenses that we've seen in the last decade, and using that as an excuse to kind of let them do their thing. They're going to know what's on the field better than anyone else because they're seeing it in real time, allowing them to adjust to what they're seeing from snap to snap, from play to play, in order to maybe cut things off quicker, which it was kind of a huge point for Baltimore's defense last year, is they'd be good for two quarters and then be awful for two quarters, because when they went in at halftime, that was the new game plan they put out there. They didn't go ahead and change anything up after the offense decided to do something different. So that's been the hugest thing. I also think, and we saw a little bit of this in the preseason, I think they're going to be more aggressive. And Baltimore has been well known over the years for an aggressive attacking defense. They didn't necessarily do that too much under Dean Pease. Don Martindale was a former linebackers coach. He's a guy that everyone on this defense loves because he'll tell you to go get the quarterback. He'll send an extra two or three guys from weird spots, which if you look at Baltimore's best defenses, that's what they did. They send a guy from, you know, the strong safety. They'll send him in and drop a defensive tackle into coverage and just mess you up offensively.
Oh, no. That sounds like a disaster for a Bills offensive line that has struggled a lot in the preseason. And with, you know, the Bills also against, a pretty tough opponent in the Bengals. Again, not to take too much out of a preseason game, but the offensive unit, first offensive unit, did struggle in pass protection, and that's probably the biggest point of concern for Bills fans. So to kind of hear you say an attacking defense, an aggressive defense, when you have talent like Suggs and Mosley, it would make sense to me that you'd want to just unleash those guys after the quarterback, and we could see that prove very fruitful, Matthew, for the Ravens on Sunday. So thanks for that.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the Ravens over the last 20 years, that's really what they've done defensively, especially against inexperienced quarterbacks like, you know, Nathan Peterman, who's going to start. Mm-hmm. They're gonna try to make him wet himself by the end of the first quarter. Yeah. Just from seeing a bunch of different looks and seeing pressure from every possible way. I think the game plan is pretty obvious. They're going to try to let Nathan Peterman beat him, but they're not going to make it easy on him.
And you'd expect the Bills probably to, you know, produce a heavy dose of LeSean McCoy there. Just from the run defense standpoint, how is that shaping up?
Run defense for Baltimore was a huge disappointment last year. I mean, they went from one of the best, if not the best, in the league in previous years to about middle of the road. Now, some of that's because of injury. Their defensive line, really everyone on the defensive line, was injured at some point. They were swapping defensive tackles for and putting them in at defensive end. They weren't having a lot of success with their young guys. we're not entirely sure because preseason is what it is, so it's tough to really figure out exactly what this run defense can do. But if healthy, they have all the talent in the world, you know, in their front seven to stop any team in this league. You know, the question is, long term, can they stay healthy? As of right now, you know, they're already probably going to be down Willie Henry, who is a really phenomenal space eating defensive tackle. He's out with, or likely out with, a hernia surgery. So, you know, they're already starting to get some of those tinges of guys being out. So I think they'll do well, you know, defensively stopping the run. It's just more of a question of can they stay healthy long term and continue to do those things while still trying to protect, you know, their biggest hole, which is running backs out of the backfield, which, of course, McCoy does wonderfully at.
Yeah. I want to switch over a little bit now to the offense, and I want to go straight to the tight end position because I love the Ravens tight end group, and you know they've often had really good tight ends, you know, even back to, you know, Todd Heap and stuff like that. I just think that they've always had, you know, a lot of production out of that position, and Hayden Hurst was a guy in the draft that I liked a lot, and they even took Mark Andrews later too. So just how is that unit developing, and just giving more options for Flacco and maybe security blanket for him? With these guys in the lineup too.
Well, you said the key word there, which is, or the key words, which is security blanket, and that's what the tight end really is for this team, and has been over the, you know, Flacco generation. It's been guys who can settle down into zone coverage and be that. If no one else is open, I can always throw it to a sure-handed tight end who I know at the very least is going to fight for the ball and try to make sure there's not an interception, if not just being an extra 3 or 4 yards just by being there. As well as using those tight ends to kind of attack the seam a little bit. Baltimore is probably one of the only teams that uses them in every possible way. I mean, they run two tight end sets a majority of the time over the last few years. I think the last number I saw was something to the effect of like 55% of the time two tight ends are on the field for Baltimore. So that's a huge indication of what they do, and that's why they went after two tight ends in the draft. Now, Hayden Hurst probably going to miss this game. He has a stress fracture in his foot. Right. He had some screws installed, so we're probably not going to see the rookie this game, but you are going to see undoubtedly heavy doses of Max Williams and Nick Boyle, two guys that the Ravens have counted on in the past. Both of them are solid blockers in the run game, solid blockers in the pass game, and Max Williams offers, you know, he was a former second-round pick with some serious talent in terms of you know, finding good holes in the zone and finding good yardage after the catch. He hasn't necessarily panned out as a second round pick, but he's a guy that you're probably going to see a decent amount of in this game, in an effort to just help free things up a little bit more. But I'd expect them in week one, because Hayden Hurst is going to be out, you're probably going to see mostly them in as blockers, maybe short yardage stuff as they just try to get them incorporated, maybe limp through until Hayden Hurst is ready. What I've seen out of Mark Andrews this year, obviously as a third-round pick, you know, he's raw. He's a guy that no one coming into the draft, everyone kept saying, never let him block. If you let him block, you're letting your quarterback die. That's pretty much what we've seen out of him this preseason and in training camp, is please never have him line up on anyone ever. But as a receiving option, he's big, he's fast, he's able to explode in that seam. But he just hasn't necessarily figured it all out yet. So, you know, I think reality for him over the season and in this game is maybe a niche role, maybe in certain packages, but he's just not quite there yet. Sure. Give him some time, and he'll eventually become a huge part of this offense, I think.
Yeah, a little more time to develop for him. I think casual, just football fans are really excited about Alex Collins this year. Fantasy people are just... people, you know, he's just kind of been under the radar a little bit as a running back in Baltimore, but I know he probably has high expectations for himself. I'm sure the team does, and he's definitely a great player, a fun player to watch, and I think he's going to probably burst on the scene this year. Is the offense kind of philosophy with Flacco behind center to do more play action, be a run-first team?
You know, I think we'll see more of that. They haven't really tipped their hand on how they actually plan on playing a lot this offseason.
Yeah.
But I think that would be the wise decision. Obviously, if Collins, I think a lot of defenses are going to key in on Collins, and they're going to try to make Flacco beat him. So naturally, play action is wonderful. Collins does really well at it. Flacco does really well at it. So it just makes sense that that's what they would try to do, especially when you have some speedier guys in John Brown. You have a good possession receiver in Michael Crabtree. You have those options to do quick plays off the play action and pick up a nice chunk of yards pretty easily. It's just a matter of how much are they actually going to try to do it. We're not entirely sure yet under Marty Warningwick as the offensive coordinator. Things are probably going to kind of shift around from week to week, to be honest. But that's that. I would expect a little bit more of the run than the pass, so probably like a 60-40 split, and then a lot of play action just to try to get the defense to bite and open up some things.
What happened with Rashad Perryman there? Loaded question.
Yeah, absolutely. I
was
never
it the, was it the drops?
The guy. I think he has all the talent in the world. I mean, I've said this before when reviewing his stuff, even this offseason. The guy's 6'3" and he runs a 4.2440. You can't coach that. However, you also can't coach how to catch the ball, and that was his biggest issue. One of the nastier stats from last year is he got a lot of playing time. I think I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I think he got something to the effect of like 300, 400 snaps last year, which is a good number in this offense. He had more interception yards off his hands than he did receiving yards. That's a very nasty stat for a wide receiver, and certainly a former first-round pick.
Yeah, that'll do it. I heard, too, that he, on some occasions, just on jump balls, he, where other team might have had position on potentially intercepting it, he didn't, try to play defense at certain times and kind of gave up on some plays. And, yeah, you may have all the talent in the world, but, certain effort plays like that could maybe make you fall out of favor real quick with the coaching staff, so... just like you said, a really good talent. He was in, with the Bills for a visit. So just curious on your take on what happened there. And thanks for sharing that. I want to just end with Lamar Jackson, obviously being, I don't think a surprise that Baltimore took him, but I love the fit with Baltimore in the draft. And having RG3 too behind Joe in the quarterback stable, the Ravens keeping three quarterbacks, which is a little unusual for them, but for really a lot of teams in the league. How's the guys behind Flacco, how is Lamar, transitioning into the NFL? And it is good to see Robert Griffin III still, latching on with the club and producing even in a backup role.
Yeah, I think when the Ravens selected Lamar Jackson, it surprised a lot of people. But the more you looked at what the Ravens have going on, it's the perfect fit. I mean, Marty Morningwig as the offensive coordinator obviously has experience with running quarterbacks, with mobile quarterbacks. Greg Roman as the kind of offensive consultant slash like tight end coach slash run game guy. He kind of does a little bit of everything as essentially a second offensive coordinator for Baltimore. Again, more experience with mobile quarterbacks. Quarterbacks coach James Urban, also experience with mobile quarterbacks. I mean, these guys have worked with guys like Colin Kaepernick and Michael Vick and Donovan McNabb. So when you look at those guys, well, it makes sense you draft a mobile quarterback. These are guys that have turned mobile quarterbacks into really solid players in this league. And when you have the physical talent that Lamar Jackson does, well, there's tons of upside. I think Baltimore also has the plus in, and they do this pretty frequently with the draft, is they draft guys they don't need right now. They don't need Lamar Jackson to come in and start this year. They don't really even need him to start next year. You've got Joe Flacco. He's still under contract. Granted, it's a large contract. It's a large number. It's a large cap hit. But you don't need a guy to come in and start before he's ready. So Jackson can sit back. He can maybe pick up a few plays over the course of the season, depending on how Baltimore really wants to use him this year. And just learn. Just learn the mechanics. Learn how to do things. Put yourself in good situations to pick up that situational awareness and experience. And then when he does come in, he's actually ready. And I think it's telling that Ozzie Newsome, the general manager here in Baltimore, said they actually went and traded back up into the first round to get him in the last pick, because he has that fifth-year option now as a first-round pick. They would have loved to have taken him in the second round, but having that extra year allows you to sit him for a year or two without having to necessarily worry about giving him a fat contract pretty quickly after he gets the starting job. So Jackson is a great fit here. He's learned a lot. He's developed a lot. And I've been really impressed with kind of what I've seen out of him from game to game and in practice. He's a guy who tends to not make the same mistakes more than once. The biggest issue, and this is the case with all mobile quarterbacks, is you got to push him out of trying to run first or to constantly looking for an out. You got to go ahead and teach him how to sit in the pocket and also recognize the fact that there's 11 guys on the opposite side that can also run just as fast as you and have no problem chasing you down, really, if you want to try to take a weird angle. So He's learned that over the course of this preseason. We saw him take better angles. We saw him learn when to run maybe a little bit more and keep his eyes downfield, which is huge for a rookie level quarterback. Now, turning to RG3, Griffin has done a phenomenal job. I know a lot of people were really down on him. Coming back into this year, he looked every part of, there's a number of quarterbacks in this league that are getting starting jobs, either stopgap quarterbacks or as short-term options until the team maybe can figure out what's going on. Griffin deserves that chance in this league. Now, granted, he's going to back up Joe Flacco this year, but he showed everything that I would need to see to give him a starting job for a year or two and maybe see if something happens. He looked poised. He knew when to run. He knew when he didn't need to run. He extended plays with his legs. He looked healthy. He looked smart. He looked the part of a, starting NFL quarterback, maybe not top 10 quarterback, but
sure,
starting NFL
serviceable
quarterback in this.
Yeah. League. Gotcha. Good to hear. Ozzie Newsome, is going to step down after the 2018 season, and I think the assistant GM, right, Eric DaCosta, will take over. So with that being said and kind of wrapping up here a little bit, John Harbaugh, still entrenched, I think, for now, correct me if I'm wrong, as the head coach, and I think he's pretty safe there, but is there a lot riding on this season, playoffs, no playoffs, for his job security?
So owner Steve Bisciotti came out this offseason and said, I'm not giving a playoff or bust edict. That being said, is some of the rumors I've been hearing, some of the gossip around the water cooler around here is, no, that's very much the case. It's playoff or bust for him. And after missing the playoffs, they missed it. The last time they went is 2014. If they miss the playoffs yet again, this would be only the second time that they've gone 4 years consecutively without the playoffs. The first time was the first four seasons this franchise existed. And that was also well coincided with Ted Marchibroda, who was their initial head coach, getting fired. So I think that's a really good point to kind of, focus on there is if Harbaugh doesn't turn this team around, and you can blame injuries, you can blame whatever you want to blame, at a certain point, you just need to get rid of a guy. Harbaugh has always been a rah-rah coach, a guy who can get guys motivated. But at a certain point, I think that shtick loses its shine. Mm-hmm. Eventually, guys get tired of hearing all the code words and the speeches, and they just kind of move on from you. And that's what happened with Brian Billick years ago, a great coach, but just guys got tired of hearing him. So they brought in somebody else, and sadly, Harbaugh, I don't think, has the X's and O's knowledge to warrant maybe the benefit of the doubt on that stuff like maybe another coach does. So I can certainly see this being a playoff or bust squad. I also think they've maybe made some of their roster choices and signed some contracts that could go 2-3 years or could also pretty easily be swiped down to a year. And you kind of blow things up a little bit, maybe start fresh under a new head coach next year. So I could see it going either way, but yeah. I'd say if this team doesn't make the playoffs, Harbaugh's probably out of the job.
It would make sense, too, if you start, fresh with a new GM as well. You can kind of have Eric there make his own selection out of a head coach if it comes to that. Thanks for coming on the Daily Bills Wire Daily Podcast with me. Just Final question for you. They're in a tough division, the AFC North with the Steelers, with, you know, even the Bengals. They have a tough defense. The Browns are the Browns, but probably going to improve a little bit, you would think. Where do you, just realistically, seeing the Ravens finishing this year? Is this a wild card team? Is this a team that can, you know, contend with the Steelers for the division, which I think they have the defense to do it. You're probably going to agree with me, and it probably just relies on the offense and what they can do and what they can put up. Where do you see this team finishing when all is said and done?
So to give the short answer, I think a lot of it's going to depend on health. And of course, we can say that about every team in the league.
But yeah,
with the Ravens, they've been so unhealthy over the years that, you know, they've missed out on some serious opportunities to make the playoffs. Last year, they lost one game in which they had a 97% chance to make the playoffs. They lost and let the Bills in. So health is going to be a huge thing for them. If they can stay healthy, if they can be just as healthy as they are right now, this is a team that really could win 11, 12 games fairly easily. If they aren't healthy and they drop some big names, this is also a team that could easily go 8-8. So I think they're going to fight for the division. It's just they almost always do.
Yeah.
The Bengals didn't really do anything this offseason to try and help themselves at all. I think they're relying on young talent to finally show up, and who knows about that. And the Browns do what they do every year, which is buy every free agent and then hope that works. And there's a reason why they're 1-31 over the last 2 years. That's usually the answer. So I think it's the Steelers and I think it's the Ravens. How they finish is going to be dependent on probably the health for both those teams, and if some holes can get answered, through some young talent stepping up for both squads. But I think this is very much a team that's going to fight for the playoffs. They're going to be in at the wire, probably looking for that wild card spot. So that's kind of where I peg them this year.
Yeah, the Steelers-Ravens rivalry is such a great game for just fans just watching and loving NFL football. That's a good one. So I would expect them to be battling it out for the division. And good luck Sunday. I think the Ravens are probably favored. I think the last line that I saw was 7, and they should be at home and just, you know, the better team on paper for sure. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you again, Matthew, for joining me. And I know that you had jumped on with our managing editor, too, at Bills Wire to answer a Q&A, so we appreciate you taking the time to do that so we can get a good glimpse inside the Ravens.
Yeah, not a problem at all. And, of course, you know, make sure that you check on us over at ravenswire.usatoday.com. We always go ahead and try to take a quick analysis at a bunch of different matchups. I think it's going to be a good game. I'm excited for it.
Cool.
And I can see it really going either way, depending on which version of the Ravens show up and if Nathan Peterman can be the guy that I think Bills fans are hoping he can be.
So super. Where can people find you on Twitter?
So you can go ahead and catch me at MatthewS_NFL or again, The Ravens Wire on Twitter as well. So those are the two big spots to catch me.
Cool. Well, thanks, Matt. We'll catch up with you again hopefully shortly, and have a great season, and thanks again.
Oh, thank you guys very, very much.